I'm going to deny knowing anything about it.
I'd like to call a meeting of the House Committee on Rules to order for Monday, February 2nd, 2015. And open an organizational meeting for the purpose of adopting committee rules and introduction of committee members. So the chair moves to adopt the proposed committee rules for February 2nd, 2015. Is there any discussion?
I guess I should read them.
Yes.
Yeah, Chair Hoyle, any changes to these over the previous session's rules?
Madam Chair, Representative Wilson, I will just point out a couple of changes. Rule number 15 regarding minority reports, the difference from the last legislative session is the intent to file a minority report must be given to the chair and committee staff no later than 2 hours after adjournment of the meeting at which the measure was voted out. And members have until 5 p.m. on the second business day after giving notice to deliver the minority report to committee staff. I will point out one other, this is actually a new rule for this chamber, rule number 21. All amendments must be posted online at least 1 hour before the committee can take action on that amendment during the upcoming hearing. So those are the only two changes from previous sessions committee rules.
Thank you.
Representative Gilliam, Vice Chair Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are you saying that 15 is brand new or adjusted?
15 is just adjusted.
Slow learners, what's the adjustments?
The adjustments are regarding the notification, the 2 hours after adjournment of the meeting by which the intent to file must be given, no later than 2 hours after the adjournment. That's an adjustment from 5 p.m. in the event that we vote on a measure after 5 p.m., which is possible in this committee. And that the other adjustment is members have until 5 p.m. on the second business day, which used to just be 24 hours.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other discussion? Any objection? If not, the motion passes and the rules are adopted. And with that, as this is our first meeting as this Rules Committee, I would like to have the Rules Committee members introduce themselves. And I'll start with Representative Wilson, who used to be the chair of the Rules Committee. So we'll be looking to you for some advice.
Thank you, Chair Hoyle. I am Carl Wilson. I used to be chair of this committee. It just goes to show you how elections have consequences.
I'm Rob Nose, representative from Southeast Portland and a little bit of Northeast Portland, House District 42.
I'm Mike McLean. I'm from House District 55, which includes all of Crook County and big portions of Lake, Klamath, Jackson, and Deschutes.
I'm Phil Barnhart. I used to represent House District 55 because of the weird redistricting rules that we followed in 2001. But I, since that time, I've been representing House District 11.
Vic Gilliam from House District 18. This is my fifth term. And there's one thing I've learned, Madam Chair, is anybody that represents District 14, which I think is parts of Fur Ridge, is both fair and fun.
And I'm Val Hoyle, and I represent House District 14, but that's Junction City and West Eugene and not Fern Ridge.
Ooh. Ooh.
So neither fair nor fun. Sorry.
I'm Barbara Smith Warner. I represent Northeast Portland, Maywood Park, and Park Rose in House District 45.
I'm Bill Kennemer. I represent Charmin Oak, Canby, through Molina, out to Estacada. I have half of Boring and half of Damascus and the outskirts of Oregon City. So, an interesting gerrymandering.
I'm Dan Rayfield, House District 16, which encompasses Corvallis and Philomath.
Fantastic. And Erin?
I'm Erin Seiler. I am the committee staff, along with Zoe Larmer.
Fantastic. So with that, let's get right to business. I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2177. We have a lot of people that are here to testify, and we're going to stay time to listen to anybody that wants to testify to get their to hear their testimony. What I would ask is that you remember there are a lot of people who have a lot of things to say, so if somebody's already said what you're going to say, you can say, I agree with that person, or but just be mindful of the time. With that, we'll call our first panel, Kate Brown, our Secretary of State, Gina Zedzik from the Secretary of State's office, and Steve Drunkenmiller, the Linn County Clerk.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2177 directs Oregon Department of Transportation to provide Secretary of State with electronic records containing legal name, age, residence, and citizenship information, and electronic signature of each person who may qualify as voter as prescribed by rule, and it directs Secretary of State to register as voter each non-registered person who is qualified to vote and to notify persons how to decline registration and how to select a political party should they choose. It increases maximum number of voters in precinct from 5,000 to 10,000. It establishes July 1, 2015 as date for determination of total number of registered voters in Oregon for purpose of maintaining status as minor political party for the 2016 general election. It prohibits public record disclosure of voter registration information for persons under 18 years of age. There is an emergency clause on the measure. The measure has no revenue impact. We have not been issued a fiscal statement yet on the underlying measure.
Secretary Brown.
Madam Chair, for the record, Kate Brown, serving as your Secretary of State. Thanks for the opportunity to be here this afternoon to testify in support of House Bill 2177, Oregon's new Motor Voter Act. I also want to say welcome to the new members and hello again to the returning members. We're really glad you're here. In the late 20th century, the federal government and the state of Oregon passed two very important voting rights laws, the National Voter Registration Act, also known as Motor Voter, and Vote by Mail. Both of these bills removed barriers to voting, and House Bill 2177 continues in the spirit of both of these acts. In 1993, the federal government linked elections to the division of motor vehicles across the country when it passed the National Voter Registration Act. It required DMV workers to ask folks to register to vote or update their voter registration during every single DMV interaction. In 1998, we in Oregon made the leap to vote by mail. Oregon consistently has some of the amongst the highest voter turnout amongst registered voters. 2014 was no exception. Across the country, voter turnout was the lowest since 1942. In Oregon, we maintained our traditionally high voter participation. Once again, Oregonians demonstrated that if you put a ballot in the hands of our voters, we will cast it. And my goal is to put a ballot in the hands of virtually every eligible Oregonian. The new Motor Voter Act is a significant step in that direction. So let's take a look at the bill. Put most simply, it modernizes how Oregon's Division of Motor Vehicles and the Secretary of State's office work together to register eligible citizens to vote. DMV is currently required under federal law to participate in the voter registration process. DMV workers must ask each person who interacts with the division whether they wish to register or update their registration. To date, this has led to a largely a paper process for everyone involved. DMV has access to age, address, and citizenship data. And most importantly for vote by mail, DMV also maintains an electronic signature. We want to build upon these systems that are already in place to make voter registration easier and more secure by using this information to offer voter registration to eligible voters in the system on an ongoing basis. The bill does primarily five things. First of all, it allows a person to register to vote or update a voter registration after interacting with DMV without taking additional steps or filling out any additional paperwork. Number two, it requires the DMV to regularly transmit to the Secretary of State electronic records containing the name, age, citizenship information, and electronic signature of eligible voters. Number three, it requires the Secretary of State or the County Clerk to notify the eligible voter of the opportunity to be registered to vote, the ability to opt out, and the ways in which to become a member of the political party if they so choose. It provides a 21-day window to allow a voter ample opportunity to choose not to be registered. And of course, any voter can opt out of our system at any time. Number four, it protects voter registration information for minors who may be registered to vote. Currently, this is public record. Five, it maintains minor party status. Essentially, as a result of the bill, we hit a pause button so that smaller minor parties are not suddenly disenfranchised. It gives them more time to get more voters to affiliate with their party. In closing, in a democracy, we should make it as easy as possible for eligible voters to participate in elections. Your vote is your voice, and every voice matters. I urge your passage of House Bill 2177 so that every voice can be heard. Thank you very much.
What we're going to do is have the whole panel present, and then any questions we'll have after that.
Madam Chair, if I may.
Yes.
Steve Druckenmiller is here with me from Linn County, but there are a number of county clerks in the room. Their County Clerks Association is meeting this week. I just want to say thank you to them for their hard work over the last several months, their collaborative efforts. We've really enjoyed working with them on this particular proposal.
Fantastic. For the record.
For the record, my name is Gina Zedlick, Chief of Staff for Secretary of State Kate Brown. I'm here in case there are any unanswered questions. So okay. I will hand it over to Steve Druckenmiller.
Thank you. Chair Hoyle, members of the committee, my name is Steve Druckenmiller. I am the Linn County Clerk, and I am here today representing Linn County. I am sure you will hear from the Oregon County Clerks Association, too, at some point. And you will find that, there's at least 35 speakers who are better than I am at doing this. I've spent half my life coming into this building, I guess, for lack of a better word, lobbying, sometimes testifying. And I'm always amazed at the process. I could, with the chair's recommendation, just say, hey, I agree with the Secretary of State about all this. And I do. But I did want my voice to be heard because I have been doing elections for more than 30 years. And I think this is the single most important thing that Oregon will do since we changed the face of elections in America with vote by mail. I'm not a wealthy man at all, and I've loved my government service, and that's the legacy that I leave my children. And what I'm hoping you'll keep in mind is that when you hear the other people come up here and they talk about the problems that this bill has and this concept, that I'm speaking to you from my heart, that I want to leave a legacy of being an elections official that my children are proud of. And we all like to think we belong to a profession where it has a good history. And I will tell you, in Oregon, we have the best election officials in this world. That's how we did vote by mail. It was done by the counties. It was done one or two counties at a time. And we built this from the ground up. This bill is a little bit different. It's coming from the top on down. But it does the same thing. It says, we care about Oregon's voters. We care about a right that they have that should be absolutely, basically, it's almost a civil religion. Because we base everything on what we do, which is voting. And voting is a right. Registration was a necessary evil, and still is in some cases, to getting people their ballots. But once someone has given the government the information that's needed to register to vote, to ask them to do it a second time is asking them to basically jump through a government hoop. And I find that repulsive to my profession. And my legacy, I wanted to be, as the Secretary described it, of putting a ballot in the hand of every eligible voter in Oregon. And I want to remove any impediment of any size that stops anybody from doing that. I am proud again of the people that I work with. They are the best in the world. That's not always true, even today in other states. We talked about the motor voter and the federal law that implemented that. Oregon did that before it was mandated by the federal government. Oregon made elections better before that was mandated by the Help America Vote Act. So I urge you to please to support this. And when you hear people say, oh, this is going to be difficult to implement and all the other things, it's probably true. Vote by mail was too. But we went through the process. We've given Oregonians the best election system right now in the world. So please support this and understand that the ones who will be working on these problems that do develop, they're your Oregon election officials. They're the ones from your counties. They're the people you know. And that, my dear friends, is all of our legacy. I thank you very much for this opportunity of coming and speaking with you. And I promise I will not inflict myself upon you in the future very often. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and thank you for taking the time to come up and testify in front of the committee. Comments, questions?
Yeah.
Representative Kenema.
Yeah, thank you. A couple of questions, if I may.
Absolutely.
I guess one of the topics, Madam Secretary, and particularly to you probably, is my understanding is that DMV and elections have different standards for public records requests and releasing personal information. I'd like you to address how that is resolved in this bill.
Sure. There's a couple of pieces. Number one, in terms of minors, the bill specifically provides that that public information shall not be released. As you know, the Centralized Voter Registration Database is a public database. So in terms of the discrepancies between those two, we provide potential Oregonians with registered voters with the opportunity to opt out of our Centralized Voter Registration Database by providing them notice and the opportunity to sign a declination, so they need not participate in our Centralized Voter Registration Database.
A somewhat related question, I guess, and related to my past professional experience. One of the things we've done is we've provided special security for certain registrants, particularly, for example, people who have had experiences with stalkers. And I'm wondering, how do you address this very important and frankly very dangerous concern?
Madam Chair, Representative Kenemer, we will not be receiving confidential information from the DMV. There are certain folks on the DMV database that are in a confidential status. Certain victims of domestic violence are in that category. We will not be receiving those records.
Not be receiving those records, but I guess, if I may, the problem is that when somebody makes a public information request for voters, would this person's name then be released?
Madam Chair, Representative Kenemer,
and address?
We will not be receiving those records from DMV that are in the confidential portion of their database. Do you want to end?
Sure. If I may, Madam Chair,
thank you.
Representative Kenemer, this is Gina Zedlick for the record. By when the Secretary says we'll not be receiving it, it means that we will not be registering them to vote. We won't get them. We won't contact them. They will not be registered to vote in this manner at all.
So the same thing would be true, for example, with police officers and other exempt people then?
Madam Chair, Representative Kenemer, yes.
Good. A third one, if I
yes,
may.
Absolutely.
I understand that there is another delicate issue with regard to government registering people without their explicit permission. And I wonder if you'd address that. I think that's an important legal and ethical issue. And I wonder what kinds of things you've tried to build into this to address that matter.
Madam Chair, Representative Kenemer, that's why we have provided a robust 21-day opt-out period. We will be providing the potential registered voter with the opportunity to opt out. They need to sign the notice and send it back to us. That provides us with the necessary requirements under the National Voter Registration Act of the declination. So the potential voter has plenty of opportunity to opt out, and of course they can opt out of our system at any time should they so choose.
Yeah. And I guess finally my final one, and I appreciate the indulgence. Thank you, and I appreciate your indulgence as well. I received a note from the Independent Party, who just recently achieved status as a, quote, major party. And they just expressed concern that with the significant influx of new voters who likely would register as non-affiliated, that would probably cause the loss of that new status. And I probably mentioned that more as a piece of information than as a question, but I thought it was important to put it on the record as a concern. And I would say in kind of a final concluding comment is that I am very supportive of getting people registered to vote and supporting their right to vote. However, I would say the details matter tremendously. And I think this is a very potentially dangerous step for certain individuals, and I'm very concerned about their protection and well-being. Thank you very much.
Would you care to comment on the minor party status or independent party status?
Sure. I'm going to have Ms. Zedlick talk about the minor party status. But, Madam Chair, Representative Kennemer, I just wanted to let you know that, yes, we take this very seriously. We will not be the first state moving in this direction. Louisiana is essentially pre-registering 16 and 17-year-olds with an opt-out system. So we would not be the first state. So other folks have gone before us, and I know that there are other states considering the same system. So we think that it's very important to provide Oregonians with the opportunity to register to vote. We think that our robust opt-out period and the fact that we have an online system and you can opt out anytime provide folks with the opportunity to opt out of the system. And we think there's ample opportunity for those who don't wish to participate to opt out. So thank you.
Leader McLean.
Thank you. Secretary Brown, I understand there's a bill introduced in the House to register 16 and 17-year-olds. Are you in favor of that bill?
Madam Chair, Representative McLean, the current law already provides for 17-year-olds to register. This bill does not change that. Do I support early registration of young people in Oregon? Sure.
Follow-up? 12-year-olds?
Madam Chair, Representative McClain, it makes sense. Since 1993, the federal government and the state governments have linked their Department of Motor Vehicles systems with our voter registration systems. It makes sense to me that we keep it tied that way, and so I'm not sure I would support going lower than 16, but not at this time. How's that?
If I may have a couple follow-ups, and you know, but that data, my understanding is under this bill would be exempt from public disclosure of 16-year-olds or 15-year-olds who go get permits.
Madam Chair, Representative McLean, as I mentioned, the bill protects the private information of those who are minors. So, if in the future the legislature does decide to change the voter registration age, the answer would be yes.
Right. And then in order for an Oregonian who has the lawful right to vote today, what are the steps necessary for that voter to take to be registered to vote?
Madam Chair, Representative McLean, there's generally speaking two ways that Oregonians fill out and register to vote in Oregon. One is our online process. You have to have a driver's license or a state ID in order to use the online system, or you can fill out a paper registration card. And then, in addition, people update their address information at the Department of Motor Vehicles. Roughly every year, about 125,000 paper address updates go between DMV and the county clerks. The county clerks then need to update by hand every single one of those paper registration forms.
Then one last question. Then I guess I was surprised, sir, by your use of the word repulsive, that anything that would prevent an Oregonian from voting is repulsive. But Secretary Brown just listed the ways in which somebody is able to register today. Online, filling out a card which is available in numerous locations and placing a stamp on that card. Same thing we do with mail ballots. I gotta confess, I've seen things described repulsive in my life. I'm not sure I'd describe that repulsive. And it seems to me that those are very, very easy steps to undertake when a heavy price has been paid by a lot of people over a lot of years to assure that we have the right to vote. And all we're asking of people is to go online or put a stamp on a card. That's it. And I guess I need you to tell me, do you really find that repulsive?
Chair Hoyle, Representative McLean, yes, I do find it repulsive, and I'd like to explain why. We are granted certain rights from God, and our Constitution says that. Now, at one time in Oregon, you did not have to be registered to vote. Everybody met down at the courthouse. You didn't even have a ballot. You just raised your hand, yes or no. Registration is not part of your right to vote. It is a fiction, a necessary fiction, or something that's developed so that we can administrate the election system. Now, I need to know your address, your name, how to get you a ballot. If you give me information, or I have information that does that, and my government says, no, now you've got to do this, because your right to vote is not linked with voter registration. I'm a very conservative man, sir. I mean, Secretary and I sit to her the right of her because I'm very to the right of her on things. but so when I see government, for example,
I'm to the right.
No, just
you
in
are,
this
maybe,
moment.
But
in
I'm
this
not.
Moment.
No.
For example, my right to bear arms. I believe I have an absolute right to do that unless I'm a criminal or whatever. And a government that puts barriers between me and my right to bear arms or my right to speak, any of my constitutional rights that's artificial, which registration has now become in this instance, that, you know, you and I agree, people went and died for my right to vote. They didn't go and die to make me register to vote. And as a conservative American, I am for anything that removes an unnecessary burden on an American citizen, an Oregonian, if we can do it so that they can enjoy any of their God-given, constitutionally recognized rights. So I understand how you're at first blush you could think that repulsive was way out of line as a term. But in my heart, after doing elections for as long as I have, for the goals that I see for our country and our state, it is repulsive to me, just as in the South it was repulsive if you went to register to vote and they asked you how many bubbles can that bar of soap make. It isn't registration that needs our protection. It is the right to have exercise our right with the government being as little and as small as intrusive as possible. And that's my view, sir. And I would be glad to talk with you about this later, even about my differences with her.
Well, thank you for your commitment and your service. and I admire your passion. I think the equation of voting rights and the struggle for civil rights in the South in putting a stamp on a postcard in Oregon is not well taken. I think they are radically different. I had to follow up with you because I'm still scratching my head and wondering that if you can go online or you can put a stamp on a postcard, I'm still wondering how is that a barrier? But I had to press in, and that's why I asked, and I appreciate your response.
Secretary Brown, did you want to comment?
Madam Chair, Representative McClain, if I may. I think one of the challenges we see in Oregon is our 21-day cutoff. And we know this because we have fairly compelling numbers. In the last two general election cycles alone, over 29,000 Oregonians registered in that 21-day cutoff. What that means is they wanted to vote, they registered to vote, and we wouldn't let them. I think that's an extremely compelling figure. I think our job as elections officials is to remove barriers and make voting as convenient and accessible as possible. As you know, I agree with Mr. Druckenmiller. We want to reduce the unnecessary paperwork needed to enable people to participate in this very fundamental right.
Representative Wilson.
Hi, Chair Hoyle. Thank you, and to the panel. I might be getting too old here, but I remember the immense pride of becoming of age and going down to register to vote a long time ago. And it was a great moment for me because I had an opportunity to, in some small way, thank those who had bled and died for me to be able to have such a right in such a great country. Another thing that occurs to me, and that is that I've always believed in America. We had the opportunity, we had the right to be left alone. And I know that voting is a sacred right indeed, but also there are many people in this country who value the right simply to be left alone. And when I look at the bill, if I'm understanding it correctly, and correct me if I'm off here, because it makes all the difference in the world. The way I see the bill as I look at it, the information, of course, starts with the Department of Transportation. It goes to the Secretary of State's office. It's then transmitted to the county clerks. It then involves the contact of the citizen. And so if the person declines, now, like I say, I may be wrong here, so stop me if I am. If the person chooses to decline at that point, their information has already been transferred from one to another, and ultimately to them. And so help me out. If that's the situation, could you say yay or nay?
Madam Chair, Representative Wilson, if the voter declines and does not participate, they would not be added to the centralized voter registration database. So they would not be part of the public record.
If I can follow up then, however, though, that doesn't change the fact that their information has been transmitted from one agency to another and then to the local level, county clerk, and then ultimately to them.
Madam Chair, yes, the data would have been transferred from the Department of Motor Vehicles to our office. That is correct.
Okay. If I could have one more follow-up. That's a little problematic to me in that the data is transferred, and goodness knows here in the state of Oregon we've had problems with data, big problems. But a question that I have as it relates to my county in particular. Josephine County is suffering badly by the fact that we are 68% federally owned and we've basically lost all of our income from that land. Josephine County doesn't have any money to spend on anything anymore. And so my question is relating to fiscal impact here, in that I know my county doesn't have a dollar to do anything at this stage of the game. What will the impact be on a county like Josephine as they attempt to chase down these individuals?
Madam Chair, Representative Wilson, we are very sensitive to the challenges that counties are facing in terms of fiscal challenges First of all, the counties will face an immediate cost for increased printing and mailing out additional ballots. There will also be the cost of mailing out postcards to eligible voters. However, the bill is also going to save time and money. Currently, counties must hand enter data. I mentioned earlier about 125,000 postcards annually go from the DMV to the county elections office. Those are single entried one by one at the county election clerk level. So our bill will eliminate those costs and that additional staff time. We are also working, we have requested additional resources for the counties to pay for the additional cost of printing and balloting for the 2016 election cycle.
Think you'll have a good chance of getting that?
I will do everything in my power to make that happen, Madam Chair, Representative Wilson, and I'm confident I will have the clerks working shoulder to shoulder with me.
Okay, thank you.
And Representative Wilson, as another legislator who is also from a timber-dependent county, it will be my top priority to ensure that those funds also are attached, because we're in a similar position to you. Madam Secretary, that I've received in a number of emails, and I would like you to please clarify, is people are concerned that there will be people that are not qualified to vote because they are not citizens. They may have a green card but still have a license. So could you explain what the provisions are to ensure that people who are not qualified to vote don't get registered?
Sure, Madam Chair, and I'll have Ms. Zedlick back me up in case I miss anything. But as I mentioned in my testimony, we will only be receiving data from the Department of Motor Vehicles that provides address, residence, citizenship information. So, for example, folks that have a green card are here legally and have driver's licenses, their data will not be forwarded to our office in much the same way that the confidential data will not come to our office. Does that answer your question, Madam Chair?
It does. I just felt like a number of people have concerns about that, and I really appreciate you highlighting it. All right. Are there any questions for this panel?
I have a couple.
Do you?
I do.
Okay. Vice Chair Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for being here. Thank you for coming to my office earlier and briefing me on this. I appreciate it. You are to be commended for our, as a manager of our elections division, for the kind of outcomes that we have at election time compared to other states. We should be grateful we have an overachieving Secretary of State who wants to do better. I would say, for me, philosophically, there may be a difference. You may disagree with me. I really like the goal that you said at the beginning. You'd like to see a ballot in the hand of every eligible person in Oregon, and that is a good goal. For me, slightly different. I think our goal should be, as a democratic society, to see the desire in the heart of every potential voter, of their own free will, of their own personal responsibility, of their own sort of attraction to finally getting involved. This seems to me to be well-intended. I have absolutely no doubt of your intentions and your goodwill towards the voters. But it seems to me to be a bit heavy-handed. It seems to me to be the opposite of what's been presented. That's just how it hits me. You can comment on that if you'd like, but the one specific thing in that regard that bothers me, if we're worried about hoops, asking people to jump through hoops to be registered, how do we justify saying, you're registered, and if you don't want to vote, you got to let us know in a specific period of time or by whatever mechanism? I think that's a kind of a reverse hoop, but nonetheless a hoop. Comment if you'd like.
Sure, Madam Chair and Mr. Vice Chair. I wish I could take credit for the voter turnout in Oregon. I can't. I do believe that our county clerks play a very active role in that. But I think one of the reasons that we have really good voter turnout in Oregon is because we make it inconvenient and accessible by putting a ballot in the hands of registered voters. And obviously, that's the goal, is to build on that. In terms of your question, I think I would say one of the challenges that we face in Oregon and frankly across the country is getting young people educated and engaged about the elections process. And I believe that making it convenient and accessible to vote is only one step. But this bill really ends up creating a paradigm shift. You have several organizations spending thousands of hours and many, many dollars working to actively register voters in Oregon. This bill provides an opportunity for a paradigm shift, because instead of spending their time having people fill out paperwork, they can be spending their very valuable resources and their time and energy educating and engaging young people, all voters, so that when the ballot is put in the hands of the Oregon voter, they will know exactly what's on the ballot and who's on the ballot. And so I think that's a more appropriate use of their talent and their resources and their energy. I think it's the way it ought to be in a democracy.
Thank you for that response. I have one other area that I'd like to cover. If I could, I would urge an amendment that said, before Oregon moves ahead in this way, we must first have a new policy reconnoitering of our difficulties with data, Representative Wilson alluded to. I don't lay that at the feet of the Secretary of State, but as a state, it worries me that we will have this kind of interdepartmental transfer of information that Representative Wilson mentioned, that we will be moving forward with some very sensitive, which you have acknowledged and I know you take very seriously, before the state has a chance to regroup. There was a bill last session that we unfortunately didn't get to hear, and I had the chance to talk briefly about this to the chair, and there may be another avenue in this session for us to talk about that. Would you be willing at least, and the reason I can't get an amendment through, I've been doing my vote count and it's not turning out the way I'd hope, but but it
ask me.
I'll get back to you. Would you be willing to be part of a discussion this session where, I don't know if it's an actual bill or at least folks coming to the table to talk about our ability as a state to both negotiate with private enterprises who can help us with data transfer, data systems, or our ability to improve greatly Oregon's ability to do this?
Madam Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, yes.
And then one clarifying question. So this bill is put forward isn't forcing people to vote, but rather allows them to be registered so that they have the opportunity to vote should they choose to.
Madam Chair, yes, that is correct. We are not forcing anyone to vote. We are not forcing anyone to register to vote. This provides them with the opportunity and the opportunity to opt out of that process.
Okay, perfect. Any other questions, comments?
That was my question.
Very good. All right,
ask one follow-up? Yes. Secretary Brown, this follows up on Representative Gilliam's comment. You said the opportunity to opt out. So if somebody has a religious conviction to not be registered, and I think there are some groups, frankly, in Oregon, that it violates their religion and conscience to vote or to be registered to vote. Isn't your bill requiring them to now take affirmative action to not violate their conscience?
Madam Chair, Representative McLean, that's why we have provided for a very robust opt-out provision, allows the voter, the eligible voter, 21 days to opt out, and then anybody can opt out of our online system at any time. So yes, we provide an opt-out provision. As I mentioned, Louisiana already has this for 16 and 17-year-olds. And this is definitely a paradigm shift. There's no question about it. Right now, the burden is on the people who wish to participate. This puts the burden on those who don't wish to participate. And I think in a democracy, that's the right choice.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Really appreciate it. All right. Next up will be Iris Hodge, Uma Ilavarasan, and Cappy Eaton. After that will be Melinda Joy, Emily McLean, and Rob Babette. Identify yourself for the record. We're going to start, just for a change, start on the left and move to the right. My left, not yours. And please keep your testimony to 3 minutes because we have a lot of people that want to be heard from.
Good afternoon, Chair Hoyle and members of the House Rules Committee. My name is Iris Hodge, and I'm here today to testify in favor of House Bill 2177. I support this bill because I believe it will help busy working families and parents to be responsible and engaged in our election process. I believe that we should have a system that verifies eligibility, then provides all eligible voters with an option to update their voter registration. As a full-time working single mom who's voted in every election since I was 18, which was a while ago, I need a way to keep my information updated that is accessible for me. Like many Oregonians, I struggle to find affordable housing. With rent increases and job changes, my son and I move nearly every 2 years. Between my busy work schedule and caring for my son, I could easily imagine myself forgetting to update my registration with my new address. House Bill 2177 would help to ensure my voice is included in our democracy, and it would make voting more accessible for working moms and dads like me. House Bill 2177 would help me and other working parents to be able to stay up to date in the voter registration process. With kids, work, and other obligations that all working families have, I believe that we should make democracy as accessible as possible while ensuring eligibility and accuracy. I believe this bill does just that, and I want to stay engaged in the voting process. Thank you for your time, and I encourage your support on this bill.
Thank you. Next.
Chair Hoyle and members of the House Rules Committee. Good afternoon. My name is Uma Ilavarasan, and I am here today to testify in support of House Bill 2177. I am from Washington County and am a senior at Westview High School. I am here today because I believe that this bill is essential to the creation of a more engaged and responsible youth electorate. As a teenager and leader in Junior State of America who strives to integrate high school voices into political discourse, I know that the complicated voter registration process can pose a significant obstacle to the establishment of a solid foundation for both present and future civic engagement. The time spent registering voters could be more efficiently used to foster conversations about the importance of voting and activism and issue education. HB 2177 allows for this increased efficiency. I am also here because I am at the point in my life where my peers are getting their driver's licenses and personal IDs. I believe that if my peers are eligible, we should be making voting as accessible as possible. As I've said before, I know encouraging youth to become educated voters today will help them to stay engaged in the political process for the rest of their lives. I support HB 2177 because I want to empower young people like myself, cut out administrative paperwork, and create more time for debate and discussion about issues that matter to the next generation of voting Oregonians. Thank you for your time, and I urge your support of HB 2177.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, members of the committee, Chair Hoyle.
And identify yourself for the record.
Yes. For the record, my name is Cappy Eaton. I'm the governance coordinator for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League is a nonpartisan political organization that encourages and educates citizens to participate in government. And for 95 years, that's been the League's mantra, if you will. We were organized in 1920 with a specific purpose to help people to register to vote. HB 2177 will continue our principle that democratic government depends on the informed and active participation of its citizens. The League believes a variety of practices are necessary to provide the public with adequate information regarding where and how to register, and also under what circumstances and how to re-register. Specifically, these include, first, a registration process which is accessible, well-publicized, and easily understood, as well as easy to administer and implement. Mail-in registration forms which are convenient and widely available. Oregon implementation of the National Voter Registration Act, which includes registration process training for AG personnel. All of these occur under 2177. 2177 brings the state's voter registration process and procedures into the technology age, and it will enable thousands of eligible voters to be easily registered. At this time, the DMV is already equipped with the necessary registration data to forward to the Secretary of State for processing. The ability of notified persons to opt out or to sign up for party affiliation is necessary and important. 2177 also clarifies the process, which is an improvement of the proposal that you had before you in 2013. Enactment of this legislation also carries the responsibilities for those of us already engaged in election participation. It is essential that we encourage the newly registered to learn about issues and candidates to cast their votes, and the League would be more than ready to help with that process. Oregon already leads the nation in voter turnout. Now we need to increase both registration and turnout. The League urges you to move HB 2177 forward. And on a personal note, I would say I have been voting for 70 years, and I highly recommend it.
Thank you very much. Okay, any questions for this panel? No? You're just giving me a look. I can't tell if that's a yes or a no.
I'm just happy to serve with you, Madam Chair.
Oh, you should be. Thank you so much. All right, next up, Melinda Joy, Emily McClain, Rob Bavette, and then after that, Sandy Radu, Lynette Warwick, and Tim Esau. While everyone's getting settled, I would just like to remind people, if you didn't know already, that it is Leader McLean's birthday. He has now joined me among the ranks of the 50-year-olds, so let's wish him a happy birthday. We're not singing again.
Very okay. Sang.
Yeah. Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rob Bovette here on behalf of the Oregon Association of County Clerks, OACC. OACC first thanks the Secretary of State for working with us on improving this bill from its prior versions. OACC supports this bill and urges you to pass this bill. As the Chair mentioned, and as you mentioned, Representative Wilson, this will have a fiscal impact on counties, and we've been working with Legislative Fiscal Office on identifying that, so it will be vital that this bill get funded, and we will be working with Ways and Means, as well as the Chair and others and the Secretary, to ensure that this bill does get funded.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Chair Hoyle and members of the committee. My name is Emily McClain, and I'm really glad to have the opportunity to testify before you today. I am here in support of House Bill 2177, and I'm representing the Oregon Bus Project, an organization focused on engaging young people in the democratic process and making it fun and accessible. And we are part of a very broad coalition of organizations across the state, and I think that you have testimony in front of you that's been submitted in written testimony, and also obviously today, of just a really great broad coalition that supports this. And we just have to say that, you know, we have this problem to address, which is that there are folks that are not registered or registering after a deadline that are then being left on the sidelines in terms of voting in elections because we have a deadline and we have barriers in front of them to register to vote. And we think that this is a very, very efficient and secure way to fix that issue. We think it's a straightforward solution, and we also think that House Bill 2177 provides for needed updates to the state's existing process for integrating the data collected via the DMV with the Secretary of State system. And I won't go on because I think the Secretary of State really covered a number of the issues, but it's exciting that we wouldn't even be the first state. You know, Louisiana has had the opportunity to look at registering folks to vote via the DMV system, and this is an opportunity for Oregon to do that as well. So we urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Identify yourself for the record, please.
Yes, my name is Melinda Joy, and Chair Hoyle and members of the committee, I thank you for allowing me to testify today. My name is Melinda Joy, and I'm from Coos Bay, Oregon. I urge you, to, as a student of Oregon, to support House Bill 2177, or the New Motor Voter. It is about making a simple, safe, and accurate voter registration system and process. I began life in an unstable environment, and my family never really had much. Before I was sponsored by the American Legion Auxiliary to participate in Girls State, I was awarded the state. After transitioning from foster care, I went on to enroll in community college and completed my associates from Southwestern Oregon Community College. Before pursuing public health at Portland State University, where I attend school now, I'm a senior at PSU, double majoring in health science and community health education. I've been elected as a student senator and also started my own student group, Students Alliance for Ending Rape. I spend my spare time I have either advocating for students or working on policy to reform to keep campus accountable. Everyone has different issues they care about and different reasons for why that they vote. For me, it's about having a voice and for education. We should be spending our time debating these issues rather than wondering if engaged citizens will receive their ballot next election. As a ward of the state, the most important thing for me was to be heard, especially when I had a need. A vote is my way of communicating with my government. A vote allows me to communicate my stress at the cost of school. Let me tell the government how I need more financial aid because they've divested themselves from higher education for several years now. A vote allows me to take issue with a tuition hikes and the soaring textbook costs. And a vote allows me to hold universities accountable for effectively preventing and responding to sexual violence. Those are the questions that we should be tackling, especially when the data the DMV currently collects for driver's license offers a simple and accurate way for voter registration process. And updates the addresses for people who are already registered. Let's please get this done so we can tackle the hard issues that our education has. For too many students, a vote isn't something that they can call their own. Currently, to vote, it takes time, and when you're a student, it's just another one of the thousand other things that I need to juggle in order to keep my bank account in the black long enough for me to complete my education. That burden is carried disproportionately by the needy like me. This is important to give people like myself one less thing to worry about and one big way to make an impact. Equal access to voting is about more than convenience. It's about listening to your children and remembering that their futures are our futures too. I urge you to support House Bill 2177. Thank you.
Thank you, Melinda. Really appreciate it. All right, great. Any questions for the panel? I knew there was something. I know. Wait, hold on. Hold on. I got ahead of myself. This is the first committee hearing back. Any questions, comments? Now you may go. Okay, Sandy Radu, Lynette Warrick, and Tim Esau. And after this will be Barbara Dudley, Sal Peralta, and Alex Kyler. Hi, welcome back.
Thank you. Welcome back yourself. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sandy Radu. I'm here testifying as an individual today, but I am also the GOP State Voter Integrity Chair, just for your information. I'd like to express my opposition to this bill, but I'd also like to enumerate the reasons why. First of all, in September of 2014, there were 945,000 postcards sent out by our Secretary of State to ask 945 eligible but non-registered voters to please register to vote. They were given an opportunity to do so through a special link on the website to register online. I don't know when this bill will start pumping data to the Secretary of State, But if it is before, if it is data from people who have been at the DMV before that date, it seems to me one of the things we're doing is if somebody hasn't registered to vote who received that postcard, we are deliberately disobeying their wishes by registering them to vote and then sending them a postcard to opt out because they've already been asked once. Secondly, I'd like to make a suggestion that when these voters are registered, they're brought into the system as inactive voters and they are given a chance, a postcard to send to either make themselves active or opt out. This way it would allow our county clerks to, at the next election, send ballots out to those who wish to be active, not just those who were put on the rolls who may not have paid attention to the postcard and thought it was junk mail. Secondly, I think the time frame does need to be defined as to when the data starts going and how often it goes and what happens with that 21-day deadline, because that 21-day deadline is the 21 days before the election day, but it's also the days our ballot drop. We actually have a 21-day election in Oregon, so we need to define what happens during that period of time with this data in this bill. Also, there's an ambiguity I noticed in it, and it says that the eligibility is determined by the Secretary of State, and as she stated today, by the Department of Transportation, by not sending data of people who aren't citizens and whatever, confidential and so on, which I was glad to see was addressed, by the way. But it doesn't, the bill says she's to determine eligibility, the Secretary of State's office is to determine eligibility, as well as the county clerk is to determine eligibility after the postcards have gone out and after the opt-in period is defined. And to me, that's an ambiguity that doesn't really address what's going on. And also, it contains another ambiguity which provides Secretary of State or the county clerk to issue the notification. That notification is not defined. And it's seen, at least in our county, as an unfunded mandate. Also, the person who testified, one of the people who testified previously, was talking about equal access to voting. The DMV records may provide that for people who move every year. But right now, if you move and change your address, that mechanism is already there. The DMV will send those records to the county clerk. The county clerk will update the records. And so your new address is on file. But I renewed my driver's license in 2012. So according to the things I've read, I wouldn't get one of these postcards because it starts in 2013. My license doesn't renew until 2020. So if I read all this stuff about if you've got a driver's license, you're registered to vote. I'm registered to vote, but is somebody in my position going to assume they're registered and they're not? There's some ambiguities here that to me are just not well defined. And my biggest concern about those ambiguities is the bill also states that it will be determined by rule. We all know that there is very little, because of lack of resources and lack of funding, very little oversight of tracking rule with legislation. And in this case, it's absolutely critical that we do so. And so I have some concerns that there's some non-specifics that are not addressed in this bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman Hoyle and committee. My name is Lynette Weirich, and I'm a concerned citizen from Multnomah County. I'm also an enhanced observer at the Board of Elections. I would like to first remind everyone that we are a constitutional republic, and that means that a republic, we preserve and protect the individual rights of each person who is a citizen. And in that, I agree with many things that have been said today already regarding concerns about the dangerous parts of this bill. My understanding is that there was a hack on the Secretary of State's website earlier this year, which caused some problems during our election cycle. I believe in free will, and we have the free will not only to vote, but we also have the free will to not vote. So I think to force people to register and then jump through another hoop to unregister is not allowing people the free will. I think we have a baseline that was a precedent that was done this last fall, which Ms. Radu was speaking of, on the 900,000 postcards that were sent. And I believe Jim Williams, who works at the Secretary of State's office in the Elections Division, mentioned that to date there was like 0.1% of a return on that all those postcards that were sent out. So I appreciate that there was some conversation about what is this going to cost to get, if let's say all these people register to vote, what is it going to make our elections cost? And the whole thing about voting by mail was to reduce the cost of elections and not disenfranchise voters, which I think we've demonstrated by the participation that we are seeing in the elections. So we have a technology age. It's very easy to register online. It's so easy, in fact, that I have made call-outs to homes where during the election cycle, and I asked to speak to the person that's registered, and they said, well, that's the name of my dog. So it's so easy in Oregon to register. We have people's pets registering to vote. So I will just make that, I think the Representative Gilliam makes a great point about our data handling, and that's a big concern. So I thank you about that.
Thank you.
Madam Chair Hoyle, members of the committee, my name is Tim Esau. I'm from Washington County, and I did not expect to be here this when I woke up this morning. Heard about.
I'm glad you're here. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm a concerned citizen. When I heard about this bill being proposed, I wanted to have the opportunity to come speak, and I thank you for the time and welcome you back. And I appreciate your service coming here to Salem. As a proud native of Oregon, I care a lot about this state and how elections are handled in particular, and how we make our decisions in government. And I have concerns about how this kind of a measure could dilute, concerns about the expense of it, and concerns about the control and the chain of custody of those ballots that are sent out. I guess first off, I'd like to say that I do count it as a privilege to vote, and I vote because I care what happens on those issues. And I've spoken to many people who don't care enough to register to vote, and it raises concern that if it's just cast out there, they're checking boxes and don't care what happens, or even enough to care and put the stamp on it. We have a question about the chain of custody that goes on with those ballots, and I understand, you know, there's obviously the felony for misfilling it out, but what happens with these extra printed ballots that are out there cast in the garbage, picked up and passed along, could even open up a market for empty ballots, because people who obviously didn't care enough to vote in the first place or register to take that step to register to vote aren't going to care enough about their ballot to take care with what it actually represents. And also a concern about the unnecessary expense, the unnecessary burden on the taxpayer in the counties, printing up those thousands of ballots, mailing them out, and just putting that on the counties, even though you'll cover it for a year, seems concerning that it would go on. And we have the right to vote. We don't have the right to drive. And there's a difference in what we take as rights versus what we sign up for and are entitled to. And I think that, you know, this isn't Facebook where we just want to check a like. We want to have citizens that are giving a required, considered thought to the measures that they're voting on. And I think that I would urge you to oppose this House Resolution 2177. Thank you.
Thank you. Any comments or questions from the dais? Anyone here? Thank you very much. Madam Secretary, did you want to respond to any of the questions? Or I think that there were some questions put forward, and I think they're fair. One is on the ambiguity on notification or eligibility, and then
second was the chain of command on the ballot.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I did not hear all the questions, but I will respond to the Eric mailing. That the purpose of that mailing was to securitize and make sure that our data was most accurate. The bulk of those costs were paid for by the Pew Center on the states. For example, the best example I can give, Madam Chair, is somebody was registered in one place as Joseph Lane or J.P. Lane or Joe Lane. They may have gotten a card, and the card said, you may not be registered to vote. You may wish to check your voter registration status. And I'm sorry, I didn't hear the questions about the rule-making process.
Ambiguity in the rulemaking process. There's a part of this bill is left up to rulemaking, and there's parts of the bill that it isn't completely lined out as to how this would be carried out.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to have Ms. Zedlick respond to those questions.
Chair Hoyle, members of the committee, Gina Zedlick, Chief of Staff for the Oregon Secretary of State. Because this process involves the Department of Motor Vehicles, it involves county clerks and the Secretary of State's office, we see the importance of having a very collaborative process to make sure that the answers to these questions work for all three entities involved. And so we do not envision a Secretary of State alone in a room rulemaking process. We see that as a very collaborative, very transparent process.
And then the final piece was chain of command on ballots. If someone is sent a ballot and they hadn't jumped through all the previous hurdles that you needed to get registered, then what's to say that those ballots won't be turned in by somebody else? So what provisions do we have for integrity of the ballot?
Madam Chair, committee members, I think I would respond in terms of the integrity of the voter registration system. Because folks moving through this system have already provided proof of citizenship to the Department of Motor Vehicles, at least this process is as secure as the one we currently have in place. When a voter signs a voter registration card, they simply attest that they meet the requirements of Oregon law. In terms of chain of command, in terms of the ballots, all of our ballots are marked with security codes that are trackable. So, for example, you can now go online to track your ballot when your ballot has been received by the Lane County Elections Office. You can verify that online because of our security system. The other security tool that we use is our signature verification, and this is why our partnership with the Department of Motor Vehicles is absolutely crucial. We're building essentially on our online voter registration system, which requires us to use frankly, an electronic photo of the signature that you provided at the DMV. So this is simply building on that process. We will continue to use the other security measures that we have in place.
That's great. Thank you. I mean, we may not always agree, but this is your capital. This is your Secretary of State, and I felt important that your concerns be addressed. And as someone who had my ballot returned because of a different signature a number of times, I can tell you that is a very thorough process. And I'm glad that it is, as it should be.
Madam Chair, you are not the only one in this room that has had to go in to verify to your county elections clerk that your signature did not match. Suffice to say, make sure you use the same signature every time.
Yes. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate you being here.
Chair, Madam Chair,
yes.
May I ask
yes.
just one
Absolutely.
Final question,
yes.
just one observation here. Since this has been called a paradigm shift, and I guess we're all free to read into that what we choose, but it's very few times I've seen here in Salem that a paradigm shift can be handled in one small, seemingly simple bill. So I guess my question would be, are we open to amendments which may give us a lot more comfort on the technical side of things?
Madam Chair, Representative Wilson, that would be up to the committee chair.
Mm-hmm.
That was my experience when I served in the Oregon legislature.
Thank you.
A quick question, Vice Chair Gilliam.
Thank you. Madam Secretary of State, can you imagine a mechanism when we go to the fiscal part of this, speaking to both what the Chair said and Representative Wilson said, you talked about there are efficiencies if this bill passes and money savings, but if there are costs, I'll call them up front, for counties like Josephine, is there a way to mitigate that? Maybe the word is not right. Finance that to get them through if we are putting a burden on them? Because it isn't just a matter of the savings later. It's a cash burden now. I don't know if that's in our purview, but I'd be interested in your...
Madam Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, I think we have a number of opportunities to mitigate the costs on the counties. Obviously, I know they always prefer direct general fund dollars, but there are other options to mitigate the cost to the counties as well. Yes.
Thank you.
That's our intent. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we have Barbara Dudley, Sal Peralta, Alex Keidler, and then after that, we have John... Bartholomew.
Thank you, Chair Hoyle. My name is Barbara Dudley. I'm the Senior Policy Advisor for the Oregon Working Families Party. And I'm also a senior fellow at the Hatfield School's Center for Public Service at Portland State. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify, but also for taking up what I think is a very important piece of legislation very early in this session. It will give plenty of time, I think, for this to be considered carefully. The Working Families Party, as a minor party, supports this bill. And I wanted to say that because we certainly appreciate the Secretary of State working with us. We had somewhat parochial concerns as a minor party that there would be this surge in registrations and therefore the percentage of voters that we had to register would all of a sudden also surge. And what we were able to work out with the Secretary of State was enough time for us to get our own registration numbers up to speed by 2018. So that was a very, very helpful negotiation, which we appreciate greatly. I also, though, want to speak to just the essence of this bill, because I think the fact that most of us like our vote by mail system, we do have a relatively high voter turnout. That the fact that fully a quarter of our eligible voters are not registered is a scandal for the great state of Oregon. And I think it's one that we don't pay a lot of attention to while we're patting ourselves on the back for our great voter turnout. When people are not allowed to vote, they are being shut out of our democracy, and it builds. It builds cynicism. And that is a cynicism we cannot afford. And let me just tell you a little bit of my experience at Portland State as a teacher there. Most of the poli-sci students, most of the econ students are registered to vote. But when I talk to a biology major or an engineering major or a business major or an accounting major, far fewer are registered. And it's not because they're bad people, and it's not because they don't care about this country. And it certainly shouldn't mean that they can't vote. It means they're focused on other things. They're not focused at the moment, the 21 days before the election. They're not focused on the candidates and the issues that so many of you and us are so riveted by. Frankly, they have other things on their mind. They go to school. They work hard. Many of them work full-time as well as carrying a full load at school, and a lot of them have children of their own. They are not thinking about politics. When they start thinking about politics is in those final days when the media is focused on the issues. And then they are told they can't vote. because they just moved since their last registration, or because maybe they never registered to vote. But they are being told they can't vote. That is not something we want to be doing in this country. And so whatever system you come up with, we have to allow for the opportunity for every citizen of the state of Oregon to participate in our election process. And if we're going to have vote by mail, this is the way we have to do that. Otherwise, we could have same-day registration as they do in Minnesota. You walk into the voting booth and you get to register at the same time, and then you vote. But we don't have that system anymore. This is what is going to work for us. And so unless you want to scrap the whole thing and start over again, I suggest we figure out a way to make this work. And one other thing I want to say is that the surges in voter registration tend to come during presidential elections. And that's because national organizations spend a lot of time and money registering new voters. And they're doing it mostly in the metro areas. We want all Oregonians to be enthusiastically brought into the system, and it might even improve your vote count, Representative Gilliam, you know? It's possible.
Well, thank you for that encouragement.
So, as neither a Democrat nor a Republican, I just want to say I don't think this is appropriately a partisan issue. I think this is an issue about democracy, and I really urge you to support this bill.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sal Peralta. I'm here to testify on behalf of the Independent Party of Oregon. The party is neutral on the bill, but I wanted to take some time to just express how it will affect our party, how it will affect other small parties, and then address some of the concerns that have been raised just in terms of costs and so on. First, I'd like to say I really appreciate the Secretary of State and her making her staff available to us to help us understand how the bill would affect our party. We really appreciate that. We've done a little bit of analysis on the costs, and I'm sure you're going to get the accurate data back from your fiscal office, but adding 300,000 voters, if you go to the Secretary of State's website, you see that their average cost to process a ballot is about $1.85 based on the 2012 numbers. So you multiply the 300,000 that are going to be added by the $1.85, and you get, you know, just under $600,000 in increased cost per election cycle to the counties. I suspect that that would be offset over time because you'd have fewer counties doing manual data entry and you'd have fewer staff processing voter registration, so that may balance out over time, but there is a legitimate upfront cost, and paying that out of state funds for a one-time thing might be helpful, but for cash-strapped counties, it could be a problem going forward. The question about differences between Department of Motor Vehicle data and OCVR data, the Secretary of State's data set, have already been addressed in the committee, so I won't add to that. So I would like to just talk about how the bill will affect our party and how it will affect other minor parties. Today, the Independent Party hit the voter registration threshold to become a major party under Oregon law. And what that means is that currently 5% of all registered voters in the state are registered with the Independent Party of Oregon. In 2016, based on the current statute, we would anticipate being able to participate in the state primary election funded by the state of Oregon and would be essentially a major party for this one election cycle. When we add the next 300,000 voters, it'll probably be more like 400, 450,000 voters. Those are predominantly going to be non-affiliated voters. And so we would anticipate hitting major party status in 2016 and losing it in 2018. And that creates a significant amount of uncertainty for us with respect to candidate recruitment. For example, as a minor political party, we have always allowed people who are not members of the Independent Party to seek our party's nomination. Some of you have received that nomination in the past. As a major party, there is a membership requirement of 180 days before the primary election, which means that as a major party, we would not be able to cross-nominate, at least not candidates, on our primary ballot. So we'll have to run an election with that one set of rules as a major party, and then 2 years later likely lose ballot access as a major party, and then we'd be obliged to then go back to the system that we've been using, which is allowing anybody to participate, paying for the election ourselves, administering the election ourselves. And frankly, we think that, number one, we think that minor parties should be allowed to opt into the state's elections anyway, but it does create a significant amount of uncertainty for, you know, 110,000 Oregonians in terms of how they're going to vote, what system they're going to get to use, if they're going to get to use the move to the front of the bus for 2016 and then go to the back of the bus in 2018. That's a challenge. I'm sorry.
Are you testifying on this bill or of the other bill that deals with allowing parties to be, because it sounds like you're testifying on
I'm
a
sorry,
different
Madam
bill.
Chair, okay. Members of the committee. I'm explicitly saying how this bill, if nothing else happens, will affect us. We'll be a major party. The state's going to pay for our election. We'll have certain rules for which candidates can run in 2016. And in 2018, those rules are going to change, we think, under this regime. Now, if another bill were to happen that would allow minor parties to opt in,
we'll hear it in front of this committee, and I look forward to you testifying
okay,
on it.
Thank you. So that's the main impact on the Independent Party of Oregon. In terms of the impact on the state's other minor political parties, there's a fairly good chance that the Progressive Party of Oregon would get decertified in 4 years if this legislation passes, because they are unlikely to hit the registration threshold in that period of time. And there is a likelihood that the Working Families Party and the Pacific Green Party will be obliged to run statewide candidates in order to maintain ballot access, which they're doing now anyway. But it would mean that they'd be doing that for longer. So those are the impacts on minor parties. Thank you.
And what percentage of the people that belong to the Independent Party of Oregon do you feel like understand that they're part of the Independent Party of Oregon as opposed to thinking they're non-affiliated?
Thank you, Rep. Hoyle. Well, 100% of our members, 100,000 people, received a voter's pamphlet from us in the last election cycle. So I would say 100% of the people at the time of that election were aware that they were members of the Independent Party.
I would have to say those aren't the people in my district, because the majority of people in the Independent Party of Oregon in my district actually think they're non-affiliated. So what I would encourage you to do is do better outreach to let people understand what you stand for and the difference between that and being non-affiliated. But that's a separate issue.
Chair Hoyle, thank you for the comment. And if I could just briefly respond.
Yes.
No political party in the state has spent more money reaching out to its members than we have. No political party in the state has been obliged to hold its own nominating process and has opened that process up to its full membership. So we appreciate the possibility for confusion. We actually find that confusion happens both ways. We get several people who are not affiliated who want to participate in our election and can't because they're not members.
Thank you. Did you have a quick comment?
It's a pleasure to serve with you on this committee.
Mr. Kyler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Alex Kyler. I am Lane County's Intergovernmental Relations Manager. I believe you have my testimony submitted electronically from earlier today, and there were a couple points that I just wanted to highlight in that testimony. Normally, the Board of County Commissioners provides me with a position of either we support something, we oppose it, or we ask you to amend it or don't pay any attention. In this particular case, upon understanding that this measure was coming forward, they took a position to support the concept only if funded. And I think that is a bit of a problematic stance, certainly on the first day of session. But I wanted to indicate there's a couple signals that I think I would have liked to see in the bill that I think could give our Board of County Commissioners at least some security to know that in fact the legislature will take additional steps to fund the bill. For example, in reviewing any number of the bills that have been introduced into the session thus far, many of them have a blank for an appropriation that is to go along with the policy language in the bill, and I find nothing like that in this bill. Another mechanism I think you're familiar with is where you'd see that the language in the bill does not get enacted unless a companion bill is enacted typically that companion bill may be a budget bill, for example, for the Secretary of State's office, and I don't see that in the bill at either. And I think that in the end, that those kinds of amendments to this measure would make the Board of County Commissioners in Lane County far more comfortable with the funding for the measure, which is primarily our concern. The previous testifier spoke to a cash-strapped county, and Lane County is probably more than a cash-strapped county at this point in time. I made a point about the degree to which funds have been eliminated under the Secure Federal Rural Schools Act. This is a little bit of a graph that I gave to our budget committee when they met for the first time this year. This is the story of federal funding from a timber county in Oregon. Secure Rural Schools did not get reauthorized by the 113th Congress. We're now going back to actual harvest from the federal forests, and the impacts are draconian. We fund our elections division 100% from general fund. We also 65% or so of the general fund is used to fund public safety. So going to the voters to explain the impacts of certain measures on the general fund really becomes a public safety question in Lane County. And the second thing I wanted to point out to the committee was, in fact, out of the Secretary of State's audits division, a lovely document created by their auditors about counties on the brink. They've done two of these so far. In the first one back in 2012, there were 8 counties they asked to be monitored. There are now 9. The impact to Lane County's general fund, one of the things that they do is a county indicators. One of the things they looked at was a percent change in general fund unrestricted fund balance. Lane County's experience over the past year was a reduction of 32.9% in their unrestricted general fund balance. And that, again, is the same dollars that we use to spend on public safety and elections. And then finally, one of the other indicators that you do is to look at local support. Lane County, for the first time in 2013, was able to pass a public safety levy, but we had tried about 14 times before that over the course of 9 years. We are second poorest in the county with respect to local revenue. So not only do we have a low property tax rate, but we've also been relatively poor at passing local option levies. So we ended up on the count, one of the 9 counties of which to continue to be monitored. So I think the story here, Madam Chair, is really not a whole lot of problem with the policy in the bill. The problem is the fiscal nature of it. And we're really between a rock and a hard place in Lane County. And I think that there are a couple things that could be done to the bill to give us a little bit more surety to continue to be able to be an advocate moving forward. Thank you.
And again, I think you heard from Representative Wilson and myself, and I know other people speaking with Co-Chair Buckley today. We're committed to ensure that there are that we will do everything possible to make sure that money comes along with this, especially for counties like ours. So thank you. Any questions, comments for this panel? No. Thank you very much. And John Bartholomew from AARP, and is there anyone else that didn't sign up that would like to say something that hasn't already been said? It's all you.
Okay, thank you, Chairwoman Hoyle, members of the committee, and I want to wish Representative McLean a very happy 50th birthday. You should be receiving some mail from us shortly.
This is fun.
Okay. I'm looking forward to that. Thanks.
Like, where is this going?
And I'll be very short and brief. I think if I could echo everything that Cappy
identify yourself for the record.
I'm sorry. Yes, my name is John Bartholomew for the record, and I am the Government Relations Director for AARP Oregon. And Cappy Eaton from League of Women Voters said everything that I might say, except that I hope that I someday can say that I've been voting for 70 years. So I just want to put AARP Oregon on the record in support of this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions, comments? Excellent.
Thank you
so much. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2177. We will be meeting on Wednesday, February 4th. Currently, the plan is to not meet on Fridays until the latter part of the session, if necessary. So we will try and get our work done on Monday and Wednesdays because we want to be efficient and let people, especially those of you who live further away from Salem, time to get home and be with your families. And with that, we're adjourned. With that, we're adjourned.